My name's Peter Stone. I was born in 1947 in Middleton, and I was brought up in Middleton.
And tell me a bit about your dad. What was his name and what did he do?
My father was Gilbert Stone. He was a railway plate layer or a relayer. He worked in one of the gangs in Leeds that worked all over the northeast, relaying, repairing stretches of track. He was a relayer in one of these fly gangs as opposed to regular plate laying teams. Like Woodlesford had the regular plate layers. Ardsley had the regular plate layers. Everybody had the regular plate layers. He moved around, so he could be working at Bradford one week. He spent a lot of time up the Settle and Carlisle line, down at Woodlesford, Healy Mills. They went wherever they were required. They actually had their own converted coach that went with them, that was like a mobile canteen. They used to do a lot of replacing ballast, opening out, they used to call it. It must have been back-breaking work, but they used to scrape all the old ballast out, put the new ballast in and make sure it was all packed in. He was based at Leeds City Station, but he was a Leeds man. He was born in Leeds. He was born in Hunslet in 1910.
What about your mum then? Was she from a railway family?
Well, no, her father was a lorry driver, but I fancy at one stage he had worked on the railway because his father before him, my great-grandfather, was a goods porter. When I started doing the family history bit, I found out that my grandfather was born at Aysgarth and wondered why they'd come to Leeds. But it turned out that him and my grandfather, his son of course, and another brother, all worked on the railway up at Aysgarth, Thirsk area. And I assumed that they came to Leeds to follow the railway. Because I got my great-grandfather's death certificate, which showed his occupation as railway van setter.
Do you know what that means?
I know exactly what that means, because I've done the job myself dozens of times. It was a bit ironic, really. It's a man who moves the loaded drays when they've been loaded on a loading platform. Once they've finished loading them, he pulls them out and puts an empty one in the place, or he puts loaded ones in to be unloaded originally. I mean, they call them van setters, dray loaders, call them what you will. But I assume that originally there were horses used and ropes. Yeah, I mean, I never saw any horses on the railway. I can't remember them. Although when I went to work at Hunslet Lane, there was people who were old horsemen.
And what was it like growing up with your dad working on the railway?
Well, we were very near the railway at Middleton, of course. You could hear the shunting at night when you went to bed in Ardsley Sand. Because, I mean, Ardsley was a huge railway complex. There was, five marshalling yards. Expresses coming through there, of course, because it's a mainline route. And a loco there. So as kids, we used to spend time down in the woods near there and see railway trains all the time. You lived with them.
And did you go on holiday or did you, because your dad had privileged tickets, did you go on the train quite a lot with him then?
More or less with my mother. I think in them days, I think he got about three passes a year. And my mother used to say, because Blackpool, Morecambe was a favourite of hers, and Scarborough, which was in contrast to a lot of the lads that I went to school with who never saw the sea. I mean, we never went away on holiday. It was just days out on the train. But that was, as I say, in contrast to a lot of my schoolmates who had never seen the sea. There were 32 lads in my class at school, and 32 lads all left school on the Friday and they all started work Monday. About four of them, I think, went straight into the Navy as boy sailors at 15 years old. I went onto the railway at Ardsley in 1962 when I left school. Initially, they set me on as a messenger lad.
Was it easy to get a job because your dad had been on the railway?
No, in them days you just couldn't be out of work. You could always get a job on the railway or the post office, on the buses if you were a bit older. There was more job vacancies than there were people to fill them. You just couldn't be out of work. They set me on as a messenger lad with a view to going into the clerical grades, and I hadn't been doing that very long when the station master, a nice man called Edmondson, Mr. Edmondson, Albert Edmondson, he called me into the office and he said, "We're short of a signal lampman. Will you do the signal lampman's job? And I'll pay you adult rate." So all through the bad winter of 62, 63, I was the signal lampman at Ardsley. The area extended from Beeston Station right the way through to nearly Lofthouse. And all the signals, of course, were paraffin lit, paraffin lamps. So you had to climb these signal gantries, take the lamps out, take them down, clean the wicks, clean the glasses, refill them with paraffin, relight them and climb back up the gantry and replace them. Because some of these gantries are 40, 50 feet high probably. So all through the winter of 62, 63, that's what I did. No hard hats, no high visibility vests, no health and safety training. You just got on with it.
It must have been quite a thing for them to, even in those days, to let a lad of 15 do that.
I don't know, there were different times. I mean, nowadays, if you go on the railway line, you can't go on the railway line without you've got a certificate allowing you to go on the railway. But in those days, the only health and safety training you received, well, they used to say to you, if you're going to walk on the track, make sure you're walking in the direction facing the train. And that was it.
So it must have been quite a job then, that winter.
Well, it was quite a job, because I think that winter started... It started early. It's famous for it, the length of time, I think, that it lasted. Because if I remember rightly, it started about September. Rain, cold, a lot more fog in those days, of course, than there is now. And then it progressed. Freezing weather, icy weather, frosts. After Christmas, there was heavy snow. But it lasted right away through until April. I remember it snowed in 63 on my birthday. It was a very long, cold, wet winter. And then... must have been sometime in 63. After I was turned 16, I got the idea I'd really like to be a signalman. And a vacancy arose in the signal box at Ardsley Spring Lane. And I was in there as the train signal box lad, or the train recorder, call them what you will, for about 2 years. Spring Lane box then, it controlled movements in and out of Ardsley Loco. There was up and down, fast lines of course, up and down slow lines, shunting yards. I think... you could have something like 7 trains passing the signal box in theory at the same time. It never did, but there were 7 different tracks surrounding the signal box.
It must have been quite an exciting job for somebody who was interested in the railways then, because you had a lot of steam trains, you had the A4 Pacifics on trains in and out of Leeds Central. It must have been a really fascinating job, and now there's practically nothing there.
That's right, that's right. If you go down there now, you can't begin to imagine what it was like. Ardsley, well, it was Ardsley Spring Lane Yard, but the Ardsley, what they call the Old Coal Yard, that was up near Ardsley Station, you could see 6 or 7 steam engines in there on an evening at night, all waiting the turn to leave. I mean, it was predominantly colliery traffic, coal, all that kind of thing. A lot of trains went into Newmarket Colliery, Lofthouse Colliery, in and out of there, even Middleton Colliery around here, of course.
But you did have the crack expresses, didn't you, as well?
Oh, yes, certainly, yeah, yeah. There were the A3s, the A4s, the Nigel Gresleys, Dwight D. Eisenhowers, Dominion of New Zealand, Dominion of Canada, all those. I mean, you saw those on a regular basis. But looking back 50 years ago, it was an everyday occurrence. You thought no more about it than someone today would think of seeing a bus on the road.
Being in that environment, did it turn you into a railway enthusiast, or was it just a job for you?
I think it was 50-50. I was genuinely interested because I went to night school and took night class lessons in train signalling that was held in Leeds City Station. And that stood me in good stead, actually, because I passed the exams there when I was 16. So when I went to signalling school, it was just a question of going over what I'd already done. But I was working 12-hour nights when I was 16 in Spring Lane Box. I decided that as I approached 18, I'd start applying for signalman's vacancies. And it's rather funny when you look back, because you used to get these vacancy lists for signalmen, and a lot of them was down in Lincolnshire. They no longer exist. But some of them must have been really remote, because the job was advertised, signalman, say, class 3 or class 4, and then there was a code after it, A, B, C, D, whatever it was, that all had a significance. And some of these related to accommodation, whether you could get a railway cottage there. And then it told you what the accommodation consisted of, and a lot of them were no main services, well in the garden, lighting by paraffin lights and all this kind of thing. And I used to look through these and I used to wonder where on earth these places must have been. They must have been really remote, all long since gone, I suppose. But I decided before I was 18, you had to be 18 and a half to be a signalman, and the way I saw it, if I started applying just before I was 18, by the time the process had gone through, had been appointed and going through the school, it would take me over 18 and a half. And so I applied for the job at Woodlesford, Waterloo. and I got the job before I was 18.
And had you gone to signalling training school before that then?
No. So I went to signalling training school in January 1965, and I wasn't 18 until the April. I passed out from the signalling school. I think it was a 6 weeks course at Wakefield Kirgit, and I passed out in 4 weeks. Once you'd passed out of the signalling school, you'd go to Normanton. I went to Normanton. The signalman's inspector was based at Normanton, and I can't remember his name, but he was a nice fella. And he took me all around Normanton, which of course is a lot different today than what it was then, because Normanton was a great centre for railways.
It was nearly as big as Ardsley, I would say.
Oh, I would believe it, yeah, yeah. And he took me around, he showed me around, and he took me through all the rules and regulations, and I passed out with him. How on earth I passed out on single line working, I don't know. But I did. I must have blustered my way through.
Because there weren't any single lines in that area, were
no,
there?
No, no. Well, I mean, you had to pass out on single line workings in case there was an accident on the main line and you had to run all the trains over one line. That's single line working. But it was very, very complicated system. You see from the book that there's notes to pass and regulations to be got to. And I went to Waterloo and I trained at Waterloo and I passed out.
Who taught you then how to use the box?
The signalman.
Do you know who that was?
It may have been Bill Tiffany, but I can't remember. When I was there, it was me, Bill Tiffany, and a lad called David Sawyer. Well, you familiarised yourself with the box layout, of course, and how many different block instruments there were in the box. And basically, you worked under the tuition of the signalman. Because, as I say, you had to recognise the different bell tones of the block instruments from different signal boxes. On one side, you had Woodlesford Station, and the other side was Rothwell Hague. Rothwell Hague was only a two-shift box, but after they closed down at night, you were connected through to Sturton. So when a bell went in the signal box, you had to recognise, of course, who it was that was calling your attention.
And how long did that process of learning the box take?
Probably no more than a couple of weeks. And then, when you were ready, you rang the signalman's inspector and he came to the signal box and he watched you working and he satisfied himself that you knew what you were doing before he officially said, go ahead, you know, you're in charge.
And you were doing it for real? You were actually signalling real trains? You weren't pretending, as it were?
Oh, no, it's real time. He was doing the job.
Tell me more then about Waterloo Box. Can you just describe where it was in relation to everything else?
Well, Waterloo Box, it was officially, I think, called Waterloo Colliery. Waterloo Colliery Sidings, I think, that was the name of it. But, of course, there were two main lines outside the box. And it was peculiar insofar as you could divert trains from the main line onto the slow line going into Leeds. That stretch of track's gone now. But further on, it still exists as Sturton Down Sidings at Freightliner Terminal. The slow line went right away through there. You could also halt trains on the upside, pending them turning them onto the main line. So you get trains coming up the upslow line, and you would hold them there or turn them onto the main line, depending on the availability of the track.
So it was the place where the four lines that connected with Leeds, it was the place where they turned into the two lines that go through Woodlesford.
That's right, yeah. And, of course, there was a bit of a side in there with buffer stops going down towards Woodlesford. And then you had the mainline crossover for the workings into Skelton Grange.
So as a signal box, was it a pretty advanced place to be working then?
Yes, it was pretty advanced. And it, as I say, it was peculiar by the very nature of its working and its layout. It attracted train spotters there and model railway enthusiasts who were interested in its unique, really, way of working.
Tell me more about its location. Just describe where it is and how you got there.
Well, it was situated on the downside of the line. To the rear was Farmers Fields. When you looked out to the front across the railway, although you couldn't see it from the signal box, there was the canal. And at the time that I was there was open cast mining at Temple Newsham, and that was a 7 days a week, 24 hours a day operation. To the right, there was nothing until you got into Woodlesford Station. To the left, if you walked up far enough, you could actually walk through the colliery yard, the fanny pit. But it was quite some distance off. And then there was nothing before you got to Sturton.
And how did you get to the box?
had a scooter, had a Lambretta scooter, and I used to park it on Woodlesford Station and then walk up the line.
That was quite, must be quite a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, it was quite a dangerous thing to do. And actually, somebody once told me that it was easier from where I was to ride down through the pit yard. And you could ride down through the pit yard under a sort of a bridge. And then you could turn right into the sidings and you could get closer to the signal box doing it that way. But the time I tried it, I only tried it once at night. And I came down through the pit yard and it was foggy and it was dark and there was no lights. And I stopped and got off the scooter to find out where I was, and that stopped about 6 feet short of the canal. And if I'd have gone another 6 feet, it would have been a mystery where I'd gone to.
Because you'd have fallen in the canal.
I'd have gone into the canal, yeah, me and the scooter, with a heavy railway overcoat on, and I can't swim. So that we wouldn't be sitting here today talking about Woodlesford in the 1960s.
So that frightened you to going back to parking at Woodlesford?
Yeah, I thought it's safer to go back and park on the station and walk up the line.
Right. And you said there were two other men who worked the box. What were the hours of the box? What operations did it do?
It was three shifts, 6 to 2, 2 till 10, 10 till 6. On the day shift, you went from days onto nights. So you would finish at 2 o'clock Saturday and come back for 10 o'clock on Monday night. That was your long weekend. The night shift, 10 while 6. But you worked Saturday night as well, so it was Saturday night, 10 o'clock, till 6 o'clock Sunday morning. You then came back on at 5:20 past 11 at Sunday night to collect water. They allowed you a half an hour to collect some water to take up to the box, because there's no running water in the signal box. And you opened the signal box at 5:05 Sunday night, and then you worked until Monday morning at 6 o'clock. Left at 6 o'clock Monday morning, but came back on again at 2 o'clock to start your week of afternoons.
Must have been hard going from days to nights and what have you.
Yeah, it was. Particularly, I mean, for anybody who's ever worked regular nights, I found it particularly difficult the first night because you can't sleep in the day before. If you're used to getting up at 8 o'clock, you can't force yourself to sleep longer. So Monday night was particularly difficult.
Are you telling me that the box was closed on a Sunday then?
Yes.
Is that what you...
The box was closed from Sunday morning at 6 o'clock until 5:20 past 11 Sunday night.
Because there was no coal trains going into the sidings,
no.
Really. That
no,
was the reason
that's right,
for it.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. It was a wild and lonely place at night. When you're 18 years old and you're stuck there in the middle of nowhere, because you were stuck there in the middle of nowhere, when it was very quiet, you could hear things scrabbling about under the signal box. I presume there were rats. I mean, I don't know. I never went down to have a look. But it was a wild and lonely place. Bill Tiffany had been there a long time, and I know he lived in Woodlesford. The other chap who was on with me was David Sawyer, they called him, and he was a young chap, he was a married man. But I found, when I was redundant later on in the 60s, when I went to work on the Co-op Milk, I bumped into David and David had left, because it wasn't a very well-paid job, you've got to say. I mean, it was all right for me as a single man, but a married man with a young family must have found it very, very difficult. And I know a lot of signalmen later on, they all had second jobs. Some worked in pubs and things like this. When I went to Armley Canal Road, the other guy, he drove a coach for Wallace Arnold on Sundays. So I don't think Bill had any family apart from his wife. So it would have been all right for him, providing his wife was working and given the circumstances. But certainly for a family man, it would have found it difficult to make ends meet.
Did you get paid extra for doing the night shift?
The night shift was well paid because obviously you did seven shifts. The afternoon shifts, you got a little bit extra for working Saturday afternoon. It wasn't a lot. But the day shift, of course, it was just a basic wage.